And now we're going to do an interview with Greg Trinish of The Adventure Scientist and talk to him about their nonprofit, how it got started, and all the work that they're doing.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Greg, this is Disco POD, Special 41 and Zool from The Trail Show. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm glad we were able to connect.
Yeah, finally. Sorry for the challenge getting a hold of me there.
It's always a challenge
yes,
with us.
Skype is always a thing. Nobody uses it except for when you want to have a headache.
Exactly.
That seems right, yet somehow we keep coming back to it time and time again.
And we should just tell our listeners real quick that Greg is the founder and executive director of Adventure Scientists, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. And you guys are based out of Bozeman, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We're up here in Bozeman, where it's 75 degrees yesterday and snowing today.
Oh, that's about our weather, too. We're just one day off.
April in the Rocky Mountains.
It seems to be that way all the time.
So, Greg, could you give us kind of like a basic synopsis of what Adventure Scientist is doing kind of in the conservation, you know, lens, just to give our listeners an idea of what you guys are all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, as you mentioned, are a nonprofit organization, and what we do is recruit, train, and manage volunteers from the outdoor community who are stoked to go out and collect scientific data all around the world. And we use that data, or we've collected that data for partners who are requesting it, everyone from Harvard Medical School to the Forest Service, who are requesting it to unlock solutions to environmental issues.
Excellent. Yeah. And so this is you founded this organization in 2011, correct? And what was sort of like the impetus for that?
Yeah, it did. I started in 2011 after years of exploration, and I had been out as a National Geographic explorer just really loved being outside, but first really felt it on the Appalachian Trail in 2004, where I just felt like I really wanted to be doing more with my time than just being out there for exploration's sake, and wanted to make a difference with my time. So I'd been working in the sciences for quite a while, tracking lynx and wolverines and grizzly bears up in Montana. I worked with owls out in California. I worked with some sturgeon up on the Fort Peck Reservoir and the Missouri River. And I realized that I could make a difference, and I was having a positive impact on those species through working as a biological technician, and then realized that I could teach others to do what I was doing, that you don't have to have a advanced degree, or you don't have to be super scientifically inclined to go out and make a difference.
And so after you formed the organization, what was the first project that really where you realized, man, this is going to work, people are actually going to do this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So early on, I think it was in February that I really got started. And that, when I say get started, I mean I was literally sitting on my couch just building websites. And then in May of that year, I had met the Benegas brothers, or at least Willie Benegas, at the OR show, the outdoor retailer show in Salt Lake, that January, right about the time I was starting the organization, and had talked a little bit about the idea with him, and he told me all about these plants that live up at Camp 2 on Mount Everest. And so we asked him to go out. I partnered him with two researchers actually, from Montana State University, Tim McDermott, and one named Rusty Rodriguez, who was at USGS at the time. And he brought back the highest known plant life on Earth, up at 23,000 feet or 22.5 or something.
Wow.
That's pretty
cool.
Yeah.
And so that was right away, a huge win for us. It got us some attention and press. And we really were able to provide a huge value for those scientists. And that data is really cool, actually. What they discovered is that it's a fungus that lives symbiotically with those moss that were up there. And what's so cool about it is those same fungus have been found in extremophiles, or in plants that are growing in extreme temperatures in Yellowstone. So not really extremophiles, but more extreme plants. And they're also in desert environments with drought-rich plants. They're in frozen environments with plants that are able to tolerate really cold temperatures.
That's pretty interesting. I know there's similar relationships with some of the pine trees and things that grow right on rock in Utah and things like that. They wouldn't be able to do it without those those fungal companions. So
totally. So, and like a big thing that made the news recently is that there's fungal components to lichen colonies and lichen communities as well. So I think we're just learning about all kinds of things, and there are applications to be able to grow agricultural material in drought environments or frost environments or any kind of extreme temperatures.
And that's not the only discovery that that Adventure Scientists has been a part of, right? Y'all have been part of discovering a couple of new species of diatom as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We've discovered more than 24 new species of diatoms, which are single-celled algae that have silica walls. They're like glass walls. So that brown stuff when you're on the river, that's super slippery on the rocks and the logs.
Yeah.
Those are all diatoms. Diatoms are in most water bodies on the planet, whether it's a small puddle and it's had a few days to form diatoms, or it's, you know, a lake. Those diatoms are really cool because you can use them as indicators for the pollutants that are in different waterways. So different diatoms will grow based on different environmental conditions. So discovering new species opens up whatever those indicators are, what those species are indicators for. We've discovered new species of diatoms. We've discovered new species of bacteria for a project we ran with Harvard Medical School. We've had...
What, is that those giant bacteria?
They're not giant bacteria, no, but they are really key to understanding the origins of antibiotic resistance. Mm. So with each of these projects that we take on, we're really focused where we can have an impact for some broader issue. So we have to have an environmental issue where data... or unlocking access to data will unlock solutions, where the data collection itself can really yield and lead to cool outcomes that are going to change the world in some way, big or small, and where there's a clear need for the outdoor adventure community. And so on that antibiotic resistance focused project, that was a partnership with Harvard Medical School, where we collected scat samples all around the world. So everything from, birds in Afghanistan that we got samples from to, you know, fish in Patagonia. And they looked for the Enterococcus genus of bacteria in those scats and were able to find a bunch of new species in there too.
Hey, Greg, this is Disco. You briefly brushed over the fact that you had hiked the AT in 2004, and I'm kind of, you know, coming from the distance hiking community, I know there's a lot of our listeners that would be interested to hear about. I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you all were able to utilize Pacific Crest Trail through hikers as part of a PICA project. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's totally true. So PICA are one of the better citizen science projects or groups for volunteers to get involved with because they're really easy to identify. You can hear them, and they're pretty limited to scree fields. So right. We had a project where Pacific Crest Thru Hikers were doing location surveys, basically. So just telling us where they found them along the way. And, it, you know, one or two people doing that wasn't super interesting. But by the time we got, you know, 30, 40, 50 people...
Yeah.
Who had started to repeat some of the sightings and really helped us gain a pretty cool understanding of what was up there. And that was a partnership with the Craighead Institute here in Bozeman as well.
And you also enlisted, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, we've also had, you know, long distance through hikers work for the Pacific Biodiversity Institute down in South America. There's been a few folks that have tried to repeat my route down in South America.
So actually, I did want to talk about that for just a second.
Yeah.
So can you actually talk about that route for our listeners just a little bit?
Y explícale en español, por favor.
Si me quieres, yo puedo, pero la cosa es que no practica mucho.
Ah, qué bien.
Muchos años, yeah.
Pues ahora es el momento.
Don't worry, for our English-speaking listeners, we will not translate that. You can look it up on your own.
That's right.
Yeah, talk to us about that route.
In 2006, June 30th, 2006, a friend and I went to the equator, and we started walking south from Quito, just outside of Quito, Ecuador, a tiny town called Papayacta. And we chose that town because the first section of our trek was at least one that was written about. I think about 5% of our route was written about on that trip. And we walked for 2 years, 7,800 miles south.
Oh, my gosh.
So would you be interested in coming back on the trail show at a future date to be our trail of the month?
Yeah, we'd love to dig into that hike. And I know it was a while back, but good grief. 2 years? That's incredible.
Yeah, it was amazing. If you want, I'm happy to do that. The only thing is trail is a very, 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 very loose term.
Oh, well, we can call it route.
The trail show
goes way back with the trail route discussion.
Routes versus trails. Yeah, yes. we're cool with that. That's fine.
Yeah, I'd love totally to come fine. And talk to you guys about it. Yeah, you can check it out at acrosstheandes.com. I think that site is still live, and you can see where exactly we went. And it's been a few others since then.
Okay. Yeah, we'll post a link to the website.
So for the listeners, that's actually how I first found out about Greg. Was I several years ago had found out about the Inca trail system. The Capacnan. So there's sort of some of them that went down the spine of the Andes, some that went down the coast, and some connectors. And while sort of doing some reading about that, I came across Greg's trip and was like, whoa! So it's been pretty cool to see. So that was actually, that earned both of you the National Geographic Adventures of the Year, correct?
Yeah, it did. We were the first to do it. You know, there had been a few others that had done similar expeditions on roads, and like Kyle Busby, obviously, is the gnarliest guy ever. And he walked the whole length of the Americas. And there's a guy named George Megan that walked the Americas as well. But both of them did it on roads. I'm forgetting Ian's name at the moment. That'll pop in my head in a minute. Sorry if you're listening to this, Ian, but Ian hiked on roads basically right before we went down there. He had walked from the southern tip of South America to Panama and is a pretty amazing guy as well. But other than that, nobody had really done what we did, which was to do it off-road to do it without relying on a route that existed.
Wow,
it's pretty awesome. Yeah,
yeah, I can tell that there's a lot there that we could dig into. We shouldn't
we'll divert
get too
back.
Sidetracked.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to touch on that just for a second because it is pretty amazing and definitely, for some of our listeners, as far as trail cred goes, I mean, if we have a mic around here, we can drop. I think we can go ahead and do that.
Yeah, exactly.
But sort of turning back to adventure science or adventure scientists, I do know that you have some upcoming projects that are going to be perhaps of interest to our hikers. Do you want to maybe fill us in on the pollinators project? And feel free to give some exclusive new information. I know it's still pending. So
yeah, we're working with a partner at the University of Arizona to be able to supplement what I'm told is about 98% of all data points that exist for pollinators in the U.S. are really within about 2 miles of a trailhead. Pollinators being like bees and butterflies, if folks don't know. And we're going to be supplementing those data with backcountry sites. So we'll have 40 sites that are launched late this summer, and folks will be able to sign up for those on our website. We're looking for people who can hike long distances and camp out. What you'll do while up there is really collect butterflies and photograph them, and then their food species as well, and do species assessments of what they're eating. And anybody can do this. You know, you don't have to be a scientist to get involved. We work with people and teach them exactly what we need them to do. So even if you don't have any scientific training, we'd love to have you as long as you have the outdoor ability and the ability to survive and thrive in the outdoors.
So people can get info and sign up at adventurescience.org?
Yeah, it's adventurescientists.org.
Okay.
Plural. Now, is it a competitive process?
Yeah, we do screen volunteers. We do have limited positions available for that pollinators project, and we have other ones that will be launching throughout the year as well. We're going to do some oil and gas, orphan and idle well surveys with the Forest Service out in Ohio and Kentucky. We've got some other projects that you should stay tuned for. I'm not quite ready to announce any of the others.
Announce! Come on!
Nobody listens to this show. You can totally
That's
tell
right.
us.
Just my mom.
Other cool stuff for sure. I'll tell you that there'll be a project focused on timber harvest that we'll launch out on the West Coast.
Okay.
So again, we'll be looking to long distance hikers that are on the PCT for that. We'll be looking to folks up in the Inside Passage who are boating long distances that are interested in those projects as well. And that'll be a project focused on timber species, and it'll be a partnership with the World Resources Institute, the University in New Mexico, and a group called DNA for Technologies that are two geneticists we work with as well.
Now, if you do have a, say, math and science background, and maybe you happen to be a bit of an egghead in high school and college, will you get some? You get to go to the top of the pile there.
You know, science literacy is again, it's just not our key trait. When we do have a few more challenging
decisions.
Yeah, challenging decisions or challenging projects, maybe
that'd help.
It's not necessary by any means to get involved with us.
No, I was just looking for brownie points.
Right on.
So cool. There's actually a couple of other cool projects that I'd just like to touch on real briefly. Y'all did and it's, I guess, more of an ongoing but shifting phases project, the microplastics.
Yeah, that's right. We've sent people all around the world, hikers, boaters, both in freshwater and in marine water. We've sent folks all around the world to collect what we believe is the largest data set on Earth for tiny pieces of plastic called microplastics. And so this is stuff that is coming from, you know, the breakdown of larger plastics. We know that it comes from synthetic clothing. If you're washing synthetic clothing, you know, Patagonia has been a really amazing leader and helping to solve this issue and investing a lot of money and resources into finding solutions for this issue. And they do support some of our work as well. But we've partnered with them, with Clif Bar, with Crokies, with Sunski sunglasses, and a bunch of others on really trying to find solutions for this issue and reduce our impact of plastics getting in waterways. But yeah, it's been pretty shocking what we've found. I don't have the up-to-date numbers in front of me, but upwards of 90% of the samples we've collected have had plastics in them. And that's going out anywhere on Earth and collecting a 1 liter sample of water.
And so when you say anywhere on Earth too, I encourage the listeners to check out Adventure Scientist's site, first of all, and sign up and see what projects you might be able to get involved with. But also they've got, you know, you can check out the projects that they've done as well. And with the microplastics, they've got a map that you can check out all of the different places that they've done sampling, and see like what they've pulled out, how many pieces of trash they've pulled out. And it's pretty shocking. And then when you kind of look at that and realize that that's just the places that people were able to go ahead and sample, and you see all of the big portions of the ocean where there wasn't anybody sampling, you can kind of imagine that, you know, it's a pretty global phenomenon.
It's been really, really shocking for me to learn about, for sure.
Well,
I think Ian Reeves is the Ian I forgot the last name of before. So Ian Reeves,
right on.
There's your shout out, Ian.
Do you have any cool other things that you want to tell us about? Do we have any other questions that we want
to... Yeah, or anything that you want to get out about Adventure Scientists that we haven't asked you yet, or you just want to get out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, again, it comes back to this choice that we have as the outdoor adventure community. And it's, you know, we're so lucky to play in the places we do. And if you've been out there and been out for a little while, I think it's pretty clear soon to all of us that there's a desire to make a difference. And if you've ever had that desire, if you've ever felt like you wanted to do more with your time outside, we'll make it easy for you to make a real difference. And it's our job to vet these projects and make sure that they're really going to get at impact and get at outcomes as directly as possible. And that's our commitment to you, that we'll work hard to make sure that we'll make your time worthwhile while you're out there. So visit us at adventurescientist.org and sign up for a project. We'd love to have you. And if you don't get into the first project because of limited space, just keep trying. And I promise that there'll be one eventually for you.
Wow, incredible. Greg, thanks so much for talking with us here at the Trail Show today and educating our audience on what you guys are doing. You've got me fired up. I think I'm ready to go over and sign up for something.
I know what definitely. I'm doing the rest of July.
Yeah, no kidding.
And you know, I'd encourage our listeners to check it out. And if you do go out and do any work for them, drop us a line and tell us about your experience. Let us know how it was for you. It definitely sounds, I mean, I've read some of the testimonials on the site and stuff, and people seem to love it. So it's pretty neat. And again, yeah, I encourage everybody to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also one of the coolest things that has come back for me is that when people do go out and have these experiences, not only do they become more involved in the issues, they tell us that they're more likely to pursue careers in conservation as a result, but they also tell us that their mission changes. It's no longer just about hiking the length of a trail or getting to a summit. It's about, can I get more samples? It's about, can I make a difference? I think that's rad, and I think we have an amazing opportunity as the outdoor adventure community, if not a responsibility, to protect these places we love to play, and I'm proud to give folks an opportunity to do that.
Well, we thank you for what you do, and we look forward to maybe having you on in the future to tell us about future projects.
And the hike.
And the hike.
We'd love to feature you as Trail of the Month.
Anytime. Just hit me up.
Sounds good. Well, hey, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you guys.
All right, Greg.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Peace.
Bye. And there he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Greg Trinish, founder and executive director of Adventure Scientists. Man, what a cool organization.
Yeah.
They are
really
doing
is.
That was really neat rude. Work.
Yeah, inspiring.
Because, you know, it's real easy to sort of look at all of this. Like even the microplastics, yeah, that sounds depressing. But on the other hand, like we now have data, right? And like with data, you can actually start to hopefully influence policy. You can get manufacturers. He was talking about Patagonia, you know. So adventurescientist.org. Check them out. Sign up. Tell us all about it.
We'll post a link. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we've got Trail of the Month. Don't go anywhere.